Hello, everyone, and welcome to Strong Mind, Strong Body. So I'm curious, have you ever had a really bad boss or a job that caused you so much stress that you weren't able to sleep, or maybe you weren't able to shut down the negative dialogue when you got home? I bet most of us could think about at least one job that we've had where we didn't like the boss, we didn't like the culture, we didn't like the hours, we didn't like the place, whatever it was. But today I don't want to talk about just bad bosses and bad culture. I just want to talk about stress and burnout and mental health at work, because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So if there's ever a good time to talk about mental health, I think now is the time. So I'm your host, Angie Miller. This is Strong Mind, Strong Body. And I'm so glad that you joined me here today, because it's you and me talking about mental health. So it's a safe space. So I want to talk about five of the biggest ways that stress can damage your mental health, and then five strategies to combat that negative impact on your mental well-being. So whether you're feeling overwhelmed, or whether you have a client who's feeling overwhelmed, or a family member, or whatever it is, or maybe you just need a productivity boost, maybe you're low on motivation, I hope that this provides you a survival and a way to thrive at work. So just some ways to kind of safeguard your well-being. At the end of the day, there are so many mental health concerns at work, but also at home, and so many negative repercussions that I think it warrants us taking a hard look, especially during this month, what we can do to help ourselves and what we can do to help others cope. So I want to start by talking about those five ways that burnout and stress can negatively affect mental health in the workplace. Now, I've got some research that I can cite, and if you want actual links to this research, you can email me at Angie@AngieMillerWellness.com. You can put it in the comments on YouTube, however you want to reach out to me. But one of the ways that stress and burnout can negatively affect mental health in the workplace is, first and foremost, it increases our risk for anxiety and depression. Chronic stress has been strongly linked to higher risks of anxiety and major depression. And think about those jobs where it's long hours, or difficult bosses, or a difficult team culture, or heightened expectations. Think about what that does to our levels of anxiety and depression. I think you'll know if you're in one of these jobs, because maybe you are constantly worrying, or maybe you have difficulty concentrating and just staying on task. It also, if you're feeling chronic stress and it's leading to depression and anxiety, usually that means a lot of just emotional exhaustion. And sometimes people have a hard time distinguishing, am I physically tired or am I emotionally tired? Because they can feel so much the same. A lot of times emotional fatigue leads to physical fatigue, but it's also that low mood and that lack of motivation. So in one review called Burnout Depression Overlap, it found that workers who were experiencing burnout at work were at a significantly higher risk of experiencing depression or having an anxiety disorder. So you know yourself, right? You know, are you prone to anxiety? Are you prone to worry? And generally, we know with time what that means for us. Like if we're prone to worry, we know, oh, when I get worried or I get stressed, I get a headache. Or when I get worried and I get stressed, I get a stomach ache. Or I don't sleep very well. Or I notice that I'm more irritable. But think about, not everybody has that body intuition or that mental intuition. Think about my ACEs episode that I just did the last time, where my guest Stacy talking about the impact of ACEs on throughout the lifespan, and how sometimes we don't have that awareness of what's going on in our body and our mind. But at the end of the day, this prolonged activation of the stress response lowers those serotonin levels, those feel-good levels, and it can lead to mood disorders like anxiety and depression. And the truth is that when I was doing the research on this, it was scary. It was scary how much stress affects the brain and the body. So high-pressure jobs, long hours, work-life balance, chronic stress, chronic fatigue, and burnout, which then diminishes productivity and well-being. So I'm going to start with the five ways that it impacts our mental health. But again, I do have some positive solutions for you. So it's not going to be all doom and gloom, I assure you. But another way that stress and burnout affect is cognitive impairment. And I don't know about you, but when I started digging deep into the research on this, my alarm bells went off. I'm talking, I started to get worried because I thought, gosh, I mean, the research is there. The research is there on what stress does to brain health. High levels of stress hormones like cortisol disrupts our cognitive functioning. It's a fact. And when that happens, it affects our memory. So our ability to recall situations, it affects our attentional focus. So we have a hard time staying on task. It affects our ability to make chronic decisions, to solve problems effectively. And all of this obviously is going to mean that our workplace performance is going to suffer. So one study found that acute stress triggers the release of cortisol and other hormones that impairs cognition. So it found that it disrupts prefrontal cortex functions like cognitive flexibility. And the best way that I describe cognitive flexibility is it's like, think about your thoughts getting stuck. It's almost like they get locked into a box and they can't get out of the box. They feel like they're trapped. And when you're stuck, you can't see things through a clear, focused lens, which means that you're less adaptable to stress and you're more fear-based versus willing to take chances or willing to try or willing to take risks. A lot of times when I describe cognitive flexibility to my clients, I say it's almost like your thoughts get locked up here. You know, somebody climbs the stairs, your thoughts climb the stairs, they go up here and somebody locks the door and they're like, wait, wait, I want out. But they can't. They feel like they can't escape. They only know what they know and they just keep spinning. Another thing that happens when there's this influx of cortisol and other, you know, hormones that impair cognition is, again, our working memory and our attentional control. So think about your mind being so foggy that you can't retain information. You can't even focus on tasks to get them to completion. I call it squirrel brain, right? You know, squirrel, squirrel. It's like that Disney movie. I think it was called Up. And every time his or her attention was like, squirrel, squirrel. And I feel like I have those squirrel moments when I'm under a lot of stress. I hope I'm not alone. But even more frightening is that chronically high cortisol has been associated with hippocampal atrophy and memory deficits. Also atrophy of the amygdala, which is the area of the brain that's responsible for processing emotions. So think about if there's atrophy of your amygdala and you're not processing emotions well, that's going to lead to emotional dysregulation, which again can increase levels of anxiety and depression. So those are pretty scary things, right? It pays to pay attention to how stressed we are. But a third repercussion of having, you know, a lot of stress and burnout in the workplace is that emotional dysregulation. And I talk about emotional dysregulation a lot on my podcast because emotional dysregulation is really when people don't handle their emotions well. And I've always had a saying that those who don't manage their emotions manage other people with them. So people who are high responders, people who are always like, the sky is falling, and they're always in this stressed state, are probably going to be more prone to irritability. They're going to maybe be more prone to having these outbursts of anger. They might cry more easily, or struggle to manage their emotions well in professional settings. So emotional dysregulation is huge because managing our emotions and having personal insight and being able to get along with others is so much of what makes our job and our workplace culture doable, or it's what makes it feel like a good environment to be in. Keep in mind, again, that the amygdala plays a key role in emotional processing and regulation. So keep in mind, again, that the functioning of the amygdala is adversely affected by stress. So one study found that high job strain was associated with reduced gray matter in the amygdala. Ah, anytime I hear reduced gray matter or anytime I hear reduced of anything in my brain, I go, wait, alarm bells go off, right? Because that's linked to, again, very high emotional reactivity. So another study found that burnout was tied to a reduced ability to literally pull yourself out of a negative mood, meaning that, again, you're likely to feel stuck and to see, to kind of be focusing on what's not working versus what is. And basically, to me, that just means, again, you get locked in your attic, you lose perspective. So, you know, having your emotions kind of hijacked and being in a dysregulated state is a very, very strong indicator that there's a lot of stress at work and you're experiencing burnout. So far we've talked about anxiety and depression, cognitive impairment, and then emotional dysregulation. The fourth way that stress and burnout affects us in our work culture is we tend to have physical health issues. And I'm going to guess that you see this with your clients because stress has a major impact on physical health. And when our physical health is affected, our mental health is affected. Think about any time you get injured or you're not able to exercise the way that you normally do. Obviously, you are more prone to heightened emotions and you just don't deal with things as well. So think about it. Physical health issues like insomnia, headaches, digestive problems, and susceptibility to illness not only affect our physical health, but our mental health. So they say that chronic stress, we know that we're at a heightened risk for cardiovascular disease, for diabetes, for obesity, and for impaired immune function, which all of those, again, tie into emotional and mental health. I've always, you know, for decades said, I want to bridge fitness and mental health because I've always said the body and the mind work together. It's like Basil van der Kolk's book on the body keeps the score because the body is an indication of trauma and stress and dysregulation. So obviously studies support that chronic work stress leads to poor mental health due to physical health problems. So again, I'm Angie Miller, and we are talking about workplace stress and burnout and what we can do to counteract that or to increase our mental well-being in a workplace setting. So the fifth and final way is an increase in substance abuse. So I worked for an employee assistance program in a hospital setting where we worked mostly with physicians and doctors, but also external accounts. And one of the things that we did was we helped those who tested positive for drugs and alcohol or any type of substance abuse, because we know that clearly when there's an increase in substance abuse, productivity goes down, safety issues increase. So the reality is that when we get overwhelmed, some of us are going to turn to negative coping mechanisms. We're going to try to numb the discomfort. That's a big thing. I mean, that's the reality of it. Most of us don't want to go through the weeds. We don't want to go through the darkness. We don't want to go through the despair and the sadness. But the truth is, guys, the only way to really get through difficult situations is to go right into the bushes, get all scratched up and come out a little bit bloody and crying some big tears. But if you try to go around it and you try to numb it with alcohol or some type of substance, it's just going to exacerbate the problem. The reality is that alcohol and drug abuse increase absenteeism and they impair performance. And obviously they drive up safety issues. They disrupt people's ability to get along well with other people, which means communication is almost positive communication is like at a standstill. So at the end of the day, it impacts workplace performance and retention. So I'm a big advocate for every employer out there offering some type of mental health services, whether it's through an employee assistance program, which I'm a huge advocate of because we offer solution-focused short-term therapy that says, hey, this is where you are today. This is where you'd like to be. Let's talk about positive coping. Let's talk about positive stress skills. So one study found that individuals experiencing job burnout were at a higher risk of alcohol and substance abuse as a way to cope. Specifically, in this study, over 1,000 physicians, those screening positive for alcohol abuse or dependence, were more likely to be subject to burnout. So it goes hand in hand. You can separate the two. It's pretty hard to have a substance use addiction or abuse addiction and to be able to be functioning fully in a workplace environment. So in summary, you know what, stress and burnout, you know, releases this cascade of neurobiological, cognitive, emotional, and behavioral repercussions that undermine our mental health and impair our workplace functioning. So without adequate support, without work-life balance, we are making people susceptible to not performing well at work. And when we don't perform well at work, let's face it, cuts into our bottom line. How do we pay the bills? How do we take care of our families? And so if you're a business owner, if you own a gym, if you work with clients as a wellness coach, a health coach, I really hope that you're sitting down and pausing and thinking, what am I doing to help my employees? Or what am I doing to help my clients really manage and mitigate the impacts of stress and burnout so that they can show up as their full selves? So remember, there's also a lot of job insecurity, right? Fear of being laid off, fear of being fired, fear of having our role eliminated. That can produce tremendous anxiety and stress. You know, I have a good friend who works for a company right now, and they've announced that there's going to be over 7,000 cuts coming in July. Well, wouldn't you know, they announced it months ago. Like, really? So, you know, it'd be different if they announced it and then they immediately said who was going to get cut. But instead, they announced it almost like this dark doom and gloom cloud, like, oh, don't worry about it. But by the way, it's going to happen. My thought on that is, why announce it if you're not going to tell people who's going to be affected? Why not just wait? Because everybody in the organization is now leading from a place of fear versus feeling like they have positive control. And then let's not discount that last but not least, what affects our mental health is this idea of isolation and loneliness. I don't know about you, but I still work from home. Other than when I train clients or I go to the gym to teach fitness classes, which is my happy place, I still provide most all of my services at home in mental health and in coaching. So, or of course, when I'm speaking, I'm out in front of people, but that isolation and loneliness, it's real, right? We start to feel super disconnected, especially for those people living alone, which is why during the pandemic, mental health really came to the forefront because more than ever, people were like, oh my gosh, this is super isolating and lonely and I need help. Again, especially those who live alone. So if you have a client who lives alone, or you have a client who doesn't have a lot of familial resources and tools, pay attention to where I'm going next, because I really want all of us to be able to make a positive difference. So what do we do? How do we mitigate the impact of stress and burnout in this diminished mental health in the workplace? Well, I have 5 ways. Number 1, sounds obvious, but I'll go there. We have to find ways to practice stress management. And I know it's all over the internet and everybody's like, oh, that's all everybody talks about is positive coping skills, but it's a real thing. And you know what? Coping skills change throughout life. What worked for me to cope when I was in my 20s doesn't work for me in my 30s or my 40s, right? positive coping changes, just like motivation changes over time. So I think it warrants a conversation, asking your employees or asking your clients, how do you manage stress? Right? What a question to ask. It's not just, what are you eating and what are you doing to take care of your body? What about how do you manage stress? And just inviting a safe conversation around stress and then promoting things like, hey, outside of exercise, do you have a toolbox? You have a toolbox in your garage of things that can fix things, but how do you fix stress? And it can be fixed through coping. So whether it's your client likes meditation or they don't, they like yoga or they don't, or you just teach them 2 to 3 breathing techniques. Do you know how I get to sleep every night? Is through breath. When I wake up at 1 a.m. and I can't get myself back to sleep, I do breathing exercises. They can counteract those physiological effects of stress. Let's face it, in our world today, we're not just facing workplace stress, we're facing stress at home, political stress, economic stress, family stress, health stress, all the things. So we have to have a toolbox of coping skills. So there's a lot of research out there that says mindfulness-based stress reduction programs can significantly reduce anxiety and depression and job strain. And people hear about that, but they're like, well, what is mindfulness-based stress reduction? I took an 8-week course on it through UMass. So it's a big thing. And we can talk to our clients about what that looks like. There's also journaling, phoning a friend or a family member. There's grounding techniques. It's just about, again, building that toolbox, a set of things that we can go to deconstruct this idea that we always have to be on, that we always have to have our foot to the accelerator. What about putting our foot on the brakes and slowing down? So also, I think it's important to remind our clients and our employees to be mindful of the narrative around hustle culture. And I did a whole podcast on hustle culture with my friend Samantha, because it's not about do more done, get the furthest, the fastest. What if it's also about let's enjoy life. Let's enjoy family. Let's find balance. Let's just live instead of always pushing and striving. And last but not least, can we please continue to drive down that stigma around mental illness? Because what that does is it makes employees and just everyone in general hide mental health struggles because they feel like people might judge them or think they're crazy or think that they don't know how to deal with life. Well, guess what? Look at the rate of anxiety and depression in our culture. Trust me, people are not alone. They just don't necessarily realize that. So first and foremost, help your clients manage stress. Have a conversation around it and then give them some positive ways that they can build a toolbox to manage it. Number two is that we have to promote this work-life balance with people. We have to promote this healthy boundary setting. So one study found that when we have adequate time off, and we have personal interests outside of work, and we have family support, it enhanced our psychological detachment. And you're like, detachment? That's not good, is it? But what I mean by that is, or what the study is saying is that it allows you to detach in a healthy way. Like, hey, when work is done, I can leave it at work. So I can shut down the stress of work and I can make room for life and joy and all the things. And then that also reduces our risk of burnout. So yeah, absolutely. Healthy detachment is incredibly important. Not just being on all the time, but being able to like put that barrier between that was work, this is life, right? So again, I'm Angie Miller. This is Strong Mind, Strong Body, and May is Mental Health Month. And if there's one place we really need to dissect mental health is talking about mental health in the workplace, because for so many of us, our work is such a huge part of our identity. And if all else, it's what pays the bills. That's the reality. So promoting work-life balance, managing stress, those are extremely important. But I think that I would also invite you to consider this. Kind of work with your clients about some suggestions, like how to bridge that gap between work and home. Like, what can you do to create a barrier between work and home? So one of the things that I talk about to my clients is I say, okay, you work from home. That's fine. What do you do when you first shut down your computer? How do you like visualize what used to be a commute? Because remember in the old school commutes, I kind of miss those. I would listen to podcasts. I would listen to music. I would make phone calls. Well, I don't have that anymore. So I've learned that at the end of the day, when I shut down, I have to do something. So whether that's take a walk, go take a fitness class, get on the phone, call somebody, there has to be a daily thing that we do that distinguishes between work and home. Also, I would encourage you to consider those employees and employers and organizations that promote work-life balance. My daughter has a boyfriend who his company offers unlimited PTO. I was like, wait, tell me about that. I was just in Denver visiting them and I'm like, so do people take advantage? Absolutely not. He's like, I never took advantage of it. I was just so appreciative that they offered it. There's also companies that promote mental health days, and most studies will support that employees don't take advantage. They appreciate that their employer is aware and that they trust their employees and give them the autonomy to decide, hey, this is what I need. This is when I need it. And they know that it will increase performance and it will increase their mental well-being. Think about, I know this is kind of a silly example, but I was thinking about this when I was working on this podcast. I was thinking, remember when you were in like elementary school and you had to take bathroom breaks and everybody had to go to the bathroom at the same time? And I was like, where did that ever become a good idea that allegedly everyone needs to go to the bathroom at the same time? And so to me, it's that same thing, is that not everybody needs a mental health day on the same day. Not everybody needs, you know, a certain amount of PTO. Some employees might not need as much PTO one year, and the next year they might need a ton of it because maybe they're caring for an aging parent or maybe they're going through a difficult divorce. So I think giving employees autonomy is huge. And then just kind of talking to your clients, even if you're not the owner of the company, what can they do to promote work-life balance? So the third thing is what I kind of just led to was increased job control and autonomy. So whenever employees have a perception of control and decision-making authority, it buffers against job strain. So if you're an employer and you feel safe in offering unlimited PTO, or you promote EAP services, employee assistance services, over and over again, even if you put up posters about mental health, whatever it is, drive down the stigma, give people the idea, or not just the idea, but truly promote workplace autonomy. So one study found that increasing job control and autonomy led to decreased depression and anxiety and burnout. So again, those employers who promote unlimited PTA, breaks throughout the day, who pay for gym memberships, who offer coaching and therapy. I just taught a fitness class the other day, and one of the gals is a COO of a big company. She was telling me that she built into her contract that they had to pay for coaching services for her. It's like, wow, I didn't even know you could do that. I was so impressed that she thought ahead to that. So giving them this sense that they have control and autonomy, and not just a sense, but truly authentically giving them the reins and saying, here, you know you best, and I trust you, I see you. So use all the tools, and I know you'll still get your work done. So the fourth way that I think that we can counteract stress and burnout is to consider that workplace culture and doing everything we can to build a supportive workplace culture. So support and workplace relationships are critical to mental well-being. Let's face it, if you don't like the people you work with, you probably don't like your job. I think that's the reality, because to me, work is like a second family. And if I don't like the people I work with, I don't have a sense of trust and safety. And for me, a sense of trust and safety is everything. It literally is everything to my mental well-being. So, you know, how we feel about our jobs and the people we work with can have a major impact on anxiety and depression, but also on whether or not we're going to stay in that job. So having employee assistance programs to help build positive coping skills is important, or at least employees who focus on professional development, who bring in speakers to talk about how to deal with mental health issues in the workplace, how to deal with stress, how to do all the things that we've been talking about today. But also thinking about bullying and harassment in the workplace. Think about how that drives down that supportive work culture. So mistreatment from colleagues or superiors can create this hostile environment that damages mental health. So talk to your clients. I'm not saying that you're going to get out of your lane and you're going to be a therapist. I'm not saying you're going to get out of your lane and you're going to be a coach. I'm just saying invite them to talk about their workplace culture. Invite them just to a safe space where you can be a positive listener so that if there is a toxic workplace culture or there's bullying or there was a significant traumatic event, like there was, you know, a robbery at work or active shooter situations, all the things that are going on in our world, just provide a safe space, a listening ear. You don't have to fix it. We're not here to fix people because they're not broken, but you can listen for free, right? So just make sure that even if you're working with somebody whose employer does not give them tools to function effectively, you are working with them to give them tools to help them function effectively, right? So high levels of workplace support correlates with lower burnout and depression. There's all kinds of studies that support that. Last but not least, if we really want to promote mental health in the workplace, obviously engaging in regular exercise. And I'm going to go a step further here. It's not just physical exercise, it's mental exercise. It's the journaling, it's the talk therapy, and it's also the walking and the exercise, because we know that physical resilience or physical activity increases resilience, and that drives down stress and improves mental well-being. So think again about those employers who pay for gym memberships, or they have a gym on site, or they promote that you take a longer lunch break so you can grab a yoga class or get a workout in. So remind clients that even if their employers don't pay for the gym memberships or they don't have a yoga studio on site, remind them that the simple things they can do, like taking a walk at lunch or listening to a podcast, how about Strong Mind, Strong Body, while they're walking during their lunch, can make a powerful difference. So at the end of the day, having this multi-pronged approach to managing stress and creating healthy boundaries and feeling the sense of autonomy and job control, having social support and exercise, all those things can safeguard our mental well-being and safeguard against the detrimental effects of stress and burnout. So whatever you can do to talk to your clients or to build a positive workplace culture by promoting exercise, by promoting a positive workplace culture, by promoting job autonomy and control, by promoting balance, and by promoting stress management techniques. So I'm Angie Miller. I'm so glad that you joined me for this conversation today, because I want all of us to love our jobs. And even if we don't love our jobs, at least find ways to create balance and live a good life outside of work. So thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you next week.